I'm just drinking water with apple cider vinegar, the most Portland drink you can drink other than kombucha. But I hear my coffee delivery is coming soon. I had two coffees yesterday, and that was part of my problem.
Oh, wow. Two coffees. If I have two coffees, I am an anxious mess.
Yeah, that's what I was yesterday. It was fantastic. Sucked.
I have never, I don't think I've ever been happy with the decision to have the second coffee.
No. I mean, the first few sips, I'm like, this is amazing. I can punch my way through a steel girder. And then everything else happens. And then I turn into the worst anxiety troll in the world. And I did yesterday. And somehow I still have my friends, which is great.
That's how you know you've got like people in your corner.
Yep.
When they're able to see through or help you cope in those moments where it's like, I know I'm a lot right now. I'm trapped. Like, yeah. I don't know about you. You can run.
Yes. I have to drive this meat skeleton. You can run away and I hope you will, but first give me a hug. Tell me it's going to be okay.
I'm anxiety hug.
Presenting myself as really like a case, and I'm not most of the time, but yesterday was not great. Not a fine moment.
I know everything that I say about myself makes me seem completely insufferable, but I'm actually really cool.
I'm actually awesome and just...
Yeah, people love this.
Yeah. But something that lifted my spirits considerably this morning is that I got a notification that someone was editing the note.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know what you were doing? That was like one of the biggest dopamine hits of my life. I was like, Keenan is editing the note? What?
Oh, yeah. This morning, I literally deleted a line. That was the edit.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yeah. But if it's that easy to give you little dopamine hits, I can just like type the letter A secretly throughout the note. You can go hunting for the little highlight that it puts in there.
I mean, the highlight is exciting, but it doesn't show me a highlight when you delete something. Why did you delete something?
I deleted something that we talked about offline.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And something that, like, we would never talk about.
Okay.
On the pod.
On pod. Got it. Okay. Well, that's on okay, pod. I guess.
Sorry. And sorry for the tease to anybody who hears this portion and is like, wait, well, why wouldn't you talk about this? I don't know why I'm giving them that voice.
Hey, wait a second.
Hey.
we just talked about how much we really appreciate everybody who listened to the show, and that's how you sound in my head.
That's awful.
God. This should be what the show devolves into. It's just us going back and forth for 30 minutes. It was something where it's like it was about a personal experience that is not for public consumption.
Got it. Okay.
And so I was just like, this is just kind of taking up space here now. And we're not going to talk about this. Why have this? But we can revisit how we approach pruning that note. I just like, I saw that and I'm like, wait a second. No. And I just went for it.
Well, I appreciate that you edited the note, even if it was something to delete. That's totally fine. The note is extensive now. And when I looked yesterday to like, what do I want to talk with Keenan about today? I got real overwhelmed. There's just a lot on here and I didn't know where to start and I didn't know what to ask you about. And then, as is typical, I was in the shower and I had shower epiphany. Shower thoughts. And I was
oh my God,
I know what I want to talk with Keenan about, but only if Keenan doesn't have something to talk with me about, because you get to decide too.
I haven't showered yet today, so I haven't had any epiphanies. In fairness, I showered yesterday afternoon after I was done with yard work, so I'm not completely disgusting.
Hey, this is not a hygiene shaming podcast, so
And also we're FaceTiming, so it's like you wouldn't. Right. You would have no idea anyway.
No.
So can't smell me from here. It's not that bad yet. Yikes. I want to know about the shower epiphany.
You do. You don't have a specific thing that you want to talk with me about?
The only thing that came up as I was looking through the note is at some point I want to talk about the rise, at least what I perceive as the rise of literalism with regards to interacting with art.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have.
That was a big sigh.
Yeah, I don't have concrete thoughts. Like, I just have amorphous grievances floating about that I don't really know how to address. So I'm at this particular moment far more interested in the shower epiphany, where it sounds like, oh, wow, this is exciting. What is in your brain?
What is in my brain today is the topic of loneliness.
Oh, wow.
And I sent you a quote yesterday. Was it yesterday?
You did send me a quote yesterday.
I'm going to read the quote on pod. This is from a beautiful book called Big Friendship: How We Keep Each Other Close. And it is it's a book that came after a podcast that I listened to called Call Your Girlfriend, and it's about Anne and Amina's friendship. And I just noticed that this library, I checked it out from the library, this library book has, oh my gosh, I think I'm going to start crying. This is terrible. Don't cry on pod.
No, this is great.
No, don't cry.
No, cry on pod.
Don't yell at me.
I'm not yelling at you. Okay. Cry.
So I read this book. I think I read the ebook. And then I checked this book out recently from the library because I wanted to remind myself of some of the most beautiful things from it. And I just happened to open it to page 51, and someone has placed a very bright neon pink post-it in the book, which, please don't do that to library books. Or when you do that, please carefully take them out before you return them.
Take the post-it
but
out.
I'm really glad you didn't. I'm really glad you didn't, because you said, whoever you are, I'm going to try and do this without crying. This is really actually making me emotional. When comforting someone, make sure to show up for them in a real way. Somebody's just written on this post-it note. And it's because in the book, they're talking about how you show up for people in a real way. But I just love that somebody thought so much of this that they wanted to write it down and make sure that they remembered it. I do love finding post-it notes in library books, even though you're not supposed to do that. But I really love it. But anyway, this book. I didn't cry. Whew, okay. The quote that I sent Keenan is, loneliness is not the condition of just being alone. A more accurate definition, according to the Washington Post, is the distress people feel when reality fails to meet their ideal of social relationships. And we both had a feeling about that. And
my reaction, my immediate reaction after you sent that was me typing in all caps, well, fuck.
Yeah.
And then in not all caps, that feels accurate. But the well, fuck is what really resonated.
Yeah. This book is full of gems like that. I highly recommend it. I will note that it is also on my bookshelf next to George L. Mossy's The Nationalization of the Masses: Political Symbolism and Mass Movements in Germany from the Napoleonic Wars through the Third Reich. Just in case you were wondering where it lives on my bookshelf.
Nice little bedtime reading.
That came, that's from my historian husband, who we were talking about Nazi symbolism the other day.
Oh.
As we do. And
yeah, you
know. He said, I have a book that you might be interested in. And I said, hell yeah, that's why I married you. Book recommendations.
Yeah, you're speaking my love language.
Come on, yeah. So, but back to friendship and loneliness.
Not Nazism.
I am cognizant of the fact that when you and I first started interacting on Mastodon and And then off pod, offline, not offline, off Mastodon, off Tootin.
Off Tootin.
When are you texting? Let's say it like a normal person, Halstead. We talked about loneliness feelings. We talked about being surrounded by wonderful people, but still feeling lonely and what that was about. And I had a moment of loneliness yesterday surrounded by people I dearly love. And I want to know what that's about. I want us to talk about it. I feel like there is an epidemic of loneliness, even though we're all connected to each other all of the time. And why? Why? What is that about? So I wanted to, if you're comfortable, to delve into a comment that you've made in the past, is that when we first started interacting, you had a feeling of loneliness and you were grappling with it. And are you willing to talk about that on pod?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm an open book. Not about Nazis.
And you don't have post-it notes, for sure.
Yeah, well, actually, I do. I just had the good goddamn sense not to deface a library book with them. A temporary defacement, but why did I pronounce temporary that way?
I don't know. It was amazing.
A temporary yeah, like, I think about this a lot because it's one of those things that I like continue to struggle with. And I think the reason why my immediate response to that quote was, well, fuck, was like, oh, it's just like one of those little, I mean, speaking of epiphanies, like just one of those little epiphanies that happens where it's like, this is articulating, I think, exactly what I'm struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea that that's what that was until I read that, and then suddenly it's like, oh, you flip on the light switch and you're like, oh, everything seems so clear now. That like, it's not just that we don't have people in our lives.
Right.
And I can't speak for everybody. I don't know what everybody's situation is. I know that I hear about the loneliness epidemic. And so I'm kind of like seeing that through the lens of my own experience. And I know that everybody else's is going to be different in a variety of ways. Like I see male loneliness come up a lot. Mm. And I think the struggle for me, despite the fact that I was socialized male, I never really got along with dudes. Like I didn't have a lot of male friends.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that I did, like they were, like those close friendships were few and far between. And as I got older, they were less and less. I think circumstantially when I was in school and before I was thinking about gender at all, it was just like boys hung out with boys, girls hung out with girls. Mm-hmm. And that was just kind of the social order.
Right.
But like I do also, like with my limited experience there, I do also get the feeling that like guys just don't have a lot of permission to be like open and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may have friends, just like I have friends, but I don't always feel like a full part of myself is being able to be expressed.
Right.
Like I don't feel like I'm able to always fully express myself with other people. And I think that's kind of where the loneliness element comes in for me, mm-hmm. where I may have friends that I appreciate, people that I like talking to, but there is this sort of like, I think there's this longing for things to be a certain way. And I start to set up standards for how friendship should be and how people should interact with each other and like how frequently I want to hear from people. And, you know, I wonder if I set myself up for a lot of this heartache unintentionally, but by kind of setting these parameters that like other people might not be privy to, that these are just like inside thoughts that I keep, that it's like, it's not fair. I wonder how frequently we all do this, you know, like where we just kind of like tell stories or kind of like set up these little like benchmarks or whatever that we're not really articulating to other people. And then we're disappointed when that just doesn't pan out, like when something doesn't happen. And so I think that like the loneliness is the distress people feel when reality fails to meet their ideal of social relationships, is that like I have an expectation that isn't being met. Like my friend or like somebody who I consider a friend didn't reach out to me,
mm-hmm.
or doesn't reach out to me as frequently as I would like. And I know that my response in those situations is typically, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to sit here and feel bad about it.
Oh no.
Like I'm going to sit here and feel bad.
Uh-huh.
And tell myself, oh, like if they really cared,
yeah,
they would get in touch.
Yeah.
If I was a more exciting person to be mm-hmm. around, if I was funnier, if I was like if I was somebody that that people wanted to be friends with,
yeah,
they would do this. And this is like a weird point of contention for me, because like one of the things that happened in a friendship that has passed,
mm-hmm.
like the friendship died. God, this is just such a weird thing. I feel like such a hypocrite. But like one of the big things for me was that like this person always forgot my birthday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the weird thing is that I'm not a birthday person.
No, you told me that pretty early on.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't like, I just don't care.
Yeah.
About the birthday. Mm-hmm. I don't ever feel differently. I don't ever, I, like.
About your I'm approaching birthday. Not about.
About my birthday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing. If people like their birthday, I want to celebrate that.
Yeah.
You know, like, yes. That's a thing that is like, I want people to feel good. And like, if that's something that makes them feel good, great. I don't need the celebration. It just feels like another day to me. And like, I think about the fact that like, I'm approaching 40, and some people have very strong feelings about some of these milestones. 40 in particular seems to be a big one.
Yeah.
I feel like 30 for people sometimes felt like a big one. And I don't know, like, I'm always open to the fact that maybe my brain will switch before that happens. And suddenly it's like, oh God, I'm 40. Fuck. Oh no. Help. Why did this happen? Why does time keep relentlessly marching on? But I have a feeling that I'm going to wake up on my birthday and go, I'm 40. And that's just kind of the thought. And then I do something else that day. And so people know this about me. Like, I'm not shy about saying, like, it's just not my thing. I don't need look at me, or like, I don't know what it is about the birthday. It just feels so dull to me. But at the same time, I think what this was shorthand for was that, like, I didn't feel like this person thought about me,
mm-hmm.
or like acknowledged how much, I don't know, like I had one perspective on the friendship. I really valued this person. I really cared about them. I thought we were very close.
Uh-huh.
All the evidence that I had seemed to indicate that we were very close. And then this would occur where, like, I would not hear from them. And the birthday, I think, was just good shorthand for, oh, like, you can't even remember me on this one day.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I don't necessarily care about the birthday, it's like, if you're going to think about me on any day, it's like,
it's the day that, you know, celebrates your existence. Yeah, it would be that day.
Right. Like, it's and so it's like, it's this weird. And I recognize that that's like, that's not fair. That's not nice. That's not fair. But it's like, I think it's one of those things that I set up this sort of like benchmark, or like this rubric. And that, like, whenever this person would fail to meet that expectation, that feeling of like loneliness would start to tick up.
Sure.
Where it's like, oh, that's where that's coming from, where I have certain expectations that I've set that aren't being met. And so that tells me that, like, I am not as close or as important or meaningful to the people in my life, the people that I think about mm-hmm. in that way.
Yeah.
And so I think that, like, that's that revelation of just like, oh, like, this is not just an element of like, I don't have any friends. It's, I have expectations that I've set for myself that I, again, have not articulated to anybody.
Right.
Or have done so poorly, like where I haven't been very direct and clear about this. And so when they fail that, it's like, oh, I suck. Like, I'm not worth the time.
Right. Right.
And like, I think that's one thing that, like, in my best relationships, in the relationships that I feel like really do thrive, we have these open lines of communication. Like, I think about my relationship with Katie, and we were great friends. We were best friends before we got married. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I think was very, like, that was there from the beginning and has only gotten stronger since we started dating and then got married and have now been together for 8 years or whatever it is. That, like, we just talk about those expectations. We talk about these things very clearly.
Yeah.
And so it's like, we know how to meet each other where we need each other.
Yeah.
And that looks different for both of us.
Sure.
That, like, what I need on a day-to-day basis looks different than what Katie needs. And we get to adapt. And it's easier living in the same house.
Yeah.
You know? And it's also, I feel weird feeling lonely when I have, like, an incredible partner, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes.
But I think it's the reality of, like, oh, like, I think as social creatures, we ultimately need a network. Like, we need people for to sure. interact with. We need to feel like we're not just kind of, like, floating and disposable and whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I really value about the time that you and I have spent talking, that, like, it feels like very little is off the table.
Mm-hmm.
And we started this from the get-go with, like, very open, direct lines of communication.
Yes.
And that feels like that, even though the amount that we talk sometimes fluctuates, we're able to meet each other where we need to be. And I think that that's something that's, like, unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also one of those instances where it's like, I then use that as sort of the benchmark, you know, start to use that as the rubric.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's interesting. It makes me think about, like, okay, like, what? This is a two way street.
Mm-hmm.
I not only need something from people, they need something from me. And oftentimes they need to know.
Yeah.
What I'm feeling.
Yes.
And I need to be able to tell them, this is what I need.
Yeah.
And if somebody's like, I can't give that to you,
you have to be okay with that.
Yeah. And that sucks.
That really sucks.
And maybe that's a part of it as well, where you want to live in this limbo where it's like, no, I'm going to feel bad by myself and not have that confirmation. It's like my health anxiety. My health anxiety is like, hey, I'm pretty sure you're dying imminently,
mm-hmm.
But also don't go to the doctor, because the worst thing you could possibly do for this is get
that?
Confirmation.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm going to cede my time.
Are you?
You
thank you, Senator.
You have the floor. Yeah.
There are a couple of things that I want to say, but there's the unspoken, unmet expectations part of this that is very relatable for me, which is that I feel like I have such psychic energy that, of course, you already understand what it is I expect of you. Why aren't you meeting it, even though I have not used mouth words to communicate this? That's really...
I'm not the flawed one.
No, right? Somebody else fucked up, not me.
Yeah.
God, that's relatable. That hurts. Yes, that is... I do that all the time. And I also, with your example, which I loved, with your friend and not remembering or seeming to remember your birthday, I wonder if there were ways that that person could express that they were thinking about you that weren't around your birthday. Because, of course, my little chaos gremlin in my head is like, well, you said you don't like celebrating your birthday, so why would they remember your birthday. I mean, that's not acceptable. That's not an acceptable answer. But it just immediately came to the fore, like, well, you said you didn't care about it. So why would you care that somebody else cared about it? But of course, it's a symbol when we become friends with somebody. That's often one of the first symbolic things we learn about them is when their birthday is. And it's a symbol, even if they don't give a shit about their birthday, unless they actively do not want their birthday celebrated. But it is a symbol in which you do say, I'm glad you're on the planet, or I'm glad we're alive at the same time, or I'm just glad you're around. I'm thinking of you because all of the supercomputers in my life have reminded me of this date, or my hand-printed calendar has reminded me of this date. You know, it's like a real low bar, I guess, to remember someone's birthday and to reach out on their birthday. And I'm always aware of that when I reach out on somebody's birthday. I'm like, I'm meeting the bare minimum in my mind of friendship at this point. If I've sent you a happy birthday message, I'm not doing anything special. I'm just saying, like, you exist and I am aware of that. And somebody somewhere, you know, popped you out today. Yay. I also want to note that it's very relatable to me to want other people to meet expectations. And then also, if they can't, there are good reasons why people can't meet expectations if they're stated. It still hurts, but we all have to acknowledge that. We all have to acknowledge it and take responsibility for our own feelings about it. And that's something that I struggle with a lot, because sometimes I'll ask for something and not get it for totally valid reasons, but then I'll mope. And that's not fair. That's a very childish reaction, and that's not fair. I love that you and Katie are best friends and started as best friends. And I think that that's crucial. I think that's my bias. I think that partners should be best friends. And also,
oh my God. Yes,
I can't be Darren's every friend.
Right. Exactly.
He has friends that bring such a fullness and a richness to his life that I, as one person, can't hold. I can't hold all of those multitudes. They got their own multitudes. And like all of the people that he has such deep and meaningful connections with around history. Like, I care about history, but I can't talk to you or anyone about Jacobitism for more than probably 30 seconds. And
I don't even know what that is.
So he has all these.
Don't talk to me about it.
I won't. I'm never going to teach you about it.
Sorry, he has all these people.
He has all these people in his life that we're going to get lots of angry emails from Scottish Jacobite scholars. I love it. Or sorry.
Oh, no, we're angering the Scots?
I should say scholars of Scottish Jacobitism. I shouldn't say that they are Jacobite scholars, because I did that wrong.
It's like if you're a pirate ghost or a ghost pirate.
Exactly.
Those are two very different things.
Right. Yes, that's the mistake I just made. And also, I have friends that I can talk to about library crap that Darren is not interested in. Or, I don't know, I have friends that, like the friends that were over yesterday where we just geek out about stationery stuff, which Darren tangentially cares about but isn't going to spend 4 hours talking about a rolling stamp from Japan, which I...
Oh, he won't?
No, he won't. Isn't that funny?
Interesting.
Huh. No shade, but really?
Really? Man, I thought you two were forever.
Oh! Oh, boy. So I like what you said about being best friends with your partner, and also acknowledging that to be a full human, we need more than one friend, I'm going to say. And it's not that if you only consider that you have one best friend, you're somehow not human. It's that you have all these other, what Robin Dunbar would call loose ties in the world, where you're interacting with somebody at, you know, your local coffee shop regularly and you're just having chit chat, or, you know, somebody at work who you always you like that you wear matching shirts sometimes and you joke about that. Like we're social creatures and we need, like you said, a network. And when we don't have people in our lives who we feel seen and valued by, we can feel estranged or lonely. And yet there is that responsibility that you so astutely noted, that we have to communicate what our expectations are mm-hmm. for people to meet them. And when we don't, and then we somehow still hold people accountable, that's setting people up to fail.
Yep.
And it's also setting the friendship up to fail.
Totally.
And I am very guilty of this. Not long ago, just in friendships that didn't match my expectations of them. And I couldn't figure out why. And then after the relationship had already imploded, going back and thinking, I never really told that person what I expected. I just wanted them to be that. Because we have all these examples in popular media of people just effortlessly being friends. Like they meet, there's a meet cute or whatever, and like we hang out and we always know how to cheer the other person up. We always know how to show up for that person when they're feeling awful. We always know just because we're friends. And that's such a lie. We don't always know.
Yeah.
Even if we know, even if you've told me what you need, I could still mess that up, right? I could still, for bad reasons, for good reasons, I could still really mess that up. And you could feel not valued or not seen. Because you're like, I told Halstead what I wanted.
Yep.
Why didn't she do it? So.
I mean, yeah. You also have a bad brain. I think we all have bad brains in certain ways. Yes. Where it's like, or it's a fucking bad day. And you're just like, you know what? I'm in damage control right now. I appreciate you. However, I just cannot. And like, but you're typically not having that conversation. You're telling yourself a story. Right. Like, oh, this person isn't showing up for me. And their story that they're telling themselves is, my life is falling apart, or whatever it could be. Or like, I'm just fucking tired today. Or I had two coffees, and so now I'm really anxious. And it's like, there's so many explanations. And I think like that's something that like I've taken a long time to learn and be more comfortable with this. But like being able to tell people up front, like you were saying, like being able to be more explicit about who we are mm-hmm. and what to expect. And I go back to what like the current state of my writing looks like right now, or how I present myself on Mastodon, or even here, to a sense where it's like there's still an element of performance, you know?
Sure.
That's just kind of the nature of it. But like, I also want it to be as authentic as possible, and I want to be as upfront as possible, so I can just say, like, you know, I'm not trying to reserve things and like have like a little mental checklist of like all the ways that you are letting me down. You know, I want to be. But it's like, that's, I think, awful. in younger years, when you're young and immature, I think like you just kind of assume that people are just gonna like read your fucking mind.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're mad when they don't.
Yeah.
And at a certain point you start to learn, unless you're just, I don't know, some of my family members, but like you just start to learn over the years that like, oh yeah, no, I'm not the fucking center of the universe, and like people's lives don't revolve around me. And so I think, you know, it is important to just like, don't make people don't assume that people are going to just understand. It is nice and magical.
Yeah.
When you have a spark with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool. I think it's very rare.
Yes.
And otherwise you just like, you have to set up parameters.
Yes.
And like one of the things that I found that has helped me feel less lonely, even though it sucks, is setting up like scheduling time to reconnect.
I know it feels so forced, but it's like, if you don't force it, it's not going to happen. We don't have lives that are just like the show Friends, where it's like somehow we only ever live across the hall from each other, or we only ever go to one coffee shop. That's not true of your whole friend group. I mean, outside of grade school, high school, college, it doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
Like that way for many of us. I mean, there are some people who have very close knit local friend groups, which is amazing. And I love that for you. Also, I'm mad.
I'm mad and jealous and I hate you so much and we can't be friends. You bastard.
Thank you. Exactly. Thank you for saying what was in my head.
Uh-huh. I get you.
you really do. But you have to make time. You have to make time for the things that are important to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if your friendships are important to you, you have to make intentional time for those friendships to grow and to be cultivated and to be cared for, because friendships are living organisms, and if we don't care for them, they die. Sometimes even when we do care for them, they die, but they for sure will die if we don't care for them.
Yep.
So if you say that a friend is important to you, then the way that you demonstrate that importance is time.
Yep. And like recognizing that like being an adult is just kind of like to be constantly bombarded by responsibility, and mm-hmm. your brain will shut down if you're at the very least I'm confronted with the stuff that's like, oh god, I got to take care of this just to like survive and exist on a daily basis, and everything else, like it's like spheres of influence, like you just at a certain point, if you're in this sphere, like this is not like crucial to my survival right now, and so my brain just doesn't prioritize that. And so you need to make that a part of the routine. Like you need to be able to say like, oh yeah, we're not trapped in the same school. We're not going to the same college. We don't live across the hall from each other. We're tricked by childhood friendships into thinking that like your circumstance is enough, like you being you existing in the same time and place is enough to like cultivate a really meaningful friendship, when it's like no, I think like that you just like went to school together,
yeah,
and you shared a lot of that same like, you know, formative experience. This isn't my story, this is Katie's story, but she's told it to me and other people a couple times, and so I feel like I have a pretty good handle on it. And it is about a person that we both worked with
mm-hmm.
at a company that we both worked for at the same time. Katie and this person were having a meeting, and he was talking about how he still routinely talks to his childhood best friends.
Wow.
And Katie was blown away by this, because Katie and I are both just like, we don't have like childhood best friends that we talk to. Those relationships have gone. And his explanation was basically like, yeah, like I saw that we were all drifting apart, and I still really valued these relationships. And so I reach out to them. I call them. I email them. I set up the times. Like, we set up a routine. Like, I go out of my way to establish these norms and establish this, you know, these calendar invites or events or whatever we're doing to maintain this schedule. Because if I don't, it doesn't happen. And so it's like, if something is meaningful, if somebody is meaningful to you, yeah, it doesn't feel as organic as it did when you were in school and you would just show up and be like, hey, best friend. And that is just something that you shared together.
Mm-hmm.
Being an adult is tough. But if somebody is meaningful, saying, hey, I want to talk more frequently, can we set this up? Can we do a recurring? Can it be a monthly thing? Can it be a quarterly thing? Whatever. And I started doing this with a friend of mine recently. Yeah. And sometimes we miss that monthly and we push a week. Life happens and that's fine. But we have that thing that on the calendar and it comes up. And it's like, truthfully, yeah, there's that little bit of a sting of like, oh, you know, we shouldn't have to force it. But then at the same time, I look at my calendar invite once a month and I go, oh, yay, I get to talk to Jenny. And that's nice.
Exactly. It's super nice. I think something like here's a life hack. It's a life hack, humans, fellow humans. Anticipating good things is really good for your brain. It's really good for your brain. Whenever I write down your name on my calendar that we are going to meet, have a chat, maybe record, I don't know, cool podcast called Friendship Material.
Like and subscribe.
I get so happy every time I see it. Yeah. So not just that the thing happens and I love that, but that every time I look forward to it, I get a little rush of like, yay, we get to do this thing together. The more that you can cultivate those things in your life, I'm not going to say the happier, more content with your life you'll be, because life is a lot of everything. But you will give yourself little moments of anticipatory joy. And that lightens the load that we are all carrying, that we individually carry. I don't care what it is. Like, if you like to go to a local garden and walk around and watch the bees doing their thing, schedule that with yourself and put it on your calendar and look forward to it, because it's just so fun to like, oh, I'm looking forward to doing this thing. And then you get to do the thing, and then you get to think about that you did the thing. Like, these are all, none of this, I was using life hacks sarcastically, of course, because it's like, everybody knows this, but maybe you needed to hear it today.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that you can do in a moment of feeling like the world is pretty dark and out of your control. You can say, like, here's a thing that I know that I enjoy. I'm going to put it on my calendar, and I'm not just put it on my calendar, I'm going to look forward to it. Like, sometimes when I get into conversations with people are like, why do you have an analog calendar in these days of everything digital? I say, one of the things that I love is I love writing things down on my calendar that I'm going to look forward to. The actual physical act of writing it down makes me happy. And then every time I'm looking at my calendar, because I'm not just looking at like, what do I have to do today? But looking at what's coming up next week, I see that and I'm like, I'm going to get to do these things I'm looking forward to. And that, for me, for my brain, it helps a lot.
Yeah.
So do that, people.
I was just going to say, I've never consciously thought about, oh, maybe I should get a little calendar. And I think you've convinced me that I should go get a little calendar and start writing something down. Rather than putting it.
Are you fucking with me?
No, never. I would never. Why would I do that? Also, I recognize that me responding like that absolutely makes it sound like I am fucking with you. And that the fact that I'm now explaining this makes it sound like I'm fucking with you even more. There's no way to get out of this.
No.
I've gone into a, oh God, I almost said fuck spiral, and I don't think that's the vibe I want to give off. That's not the idea I'm trying to communicate.
Nope.
Even though it is weirdly accurate in certain circumstances.
Yes.
My point is, Halstead.
Yep.
In all seriousness.
Okay.
Not messing with you. I'm not in a mess spiral. I really do think, I'm like, oh, I don't like going into Proton calendar and put, I don't like the internet very much. I don't like my phone. I don't like apps. I used to, and then my brain broke and I don't anymore.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that's like, I spend a lot of time sitting at my desk looking at nothing. So why not have a nice little calendar where I can just like write something in there and go like, oh, this is nice. I can look at this and go, oh, yeah. And I don't need to like make, suddenly it's like, oh, the things that I have to do, because I honestly, my time is pretty free. I don't need to do a ton. So I don't think I'm going to be overwhelmed by looking at like a week and going like, oh, fuck, I have so much to do. It would, you know, your mileage may vary in that regard. But in my life right now, and the shape that it's in, it could be really nice to just go, oh, yeah, I'm just going to write this down. And I will look over and go, ah, this is nice. And not one of those things where I log into Proton once a week and go, oh, fuck. Yep, that's coming up.
I mean, you're nailing part of why there is that analog and digital divide is because in digital timekeeping and calendaring, it tends to be very much like what's happening, what's right in my face. There is a level of, I won't say anxiety to it, but there's just kind of a level of stress that we don't, that just having something that we refer to or that dings at us and says, like, you got to do this thing now, is very different than intentionally engaging with pen and paper or pencil and paper or whatever, and looking and then looking ahead. Like every Sunday night, I write down the next week's appointments, mm-hmm. and I look at it and I'm like, oh, this is cool. I make a rule that I don't write down in my appointment book anything about work that's more than that I work that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though there's a lot that goes into my job, I'm not going to give it that brain space.
Yep.
But like coming up, I have on my calendar that I'm very excited about coming up next weekend is the Pacific Northwest Pen Show. That's right. A whole weekend of fountain pens, ink, stationery, paper, and all of the things I love. And it's happening. And when I wrote it down, I was like, yeah, this is happening. I get to do it. So there is something to that physical, you're writing something down, you get to refer to it in a non, this is dinging at me way. I like it.
I think one goal I have for myself is to discover anything that I love as much as you love pens.
Isn't it video games, though?
Yeah, but it's like I just switch from video game to video game. It's always novelty. I don't like have any one game where I'm just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to obsess about that. I don't have anything that I obsess about anymore, really.
Really?
Yeah. No, I used to, you know. This is going to veer into a different topic.
Okay.
Maybe this is something to put on the note. Everybody write to us, what is our email address? highfriendshipmaterial@gmail.com if you want to hear more about this. But I used to get really down on myself that I couldn't find anything to obsess over, that like I would get really jealous of people who seem to have like their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I used to be a tech blogger. I really thought I wanted to be like a John Gruber, who is a really well-known Apple blogger. And he's been writing about Apple for a majillion years. And I was always just kind of like, how do you do this? Because I write about a topic once and I go, I never want to revisit this. Like, I just never want to talk about this ever again. I've said what I needed to say, or if I think of other things I need to say, I am already bored by it. Like, I just, and so like my career as a tech blogger was marred by the fact that like I just can't care. I don't care about this. I did until I didn't. And it was that was very short. That amount of time was very short.
Yeah.
And so I do get fascinated by people who, like, I don't want to say hyperfixate, but like have their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to like give them life. Like they're like, I love talking about this one thing. I want to dig into this. I want to learn everything about this. They are deep divers. And I'm like a shallow treader. I'm just like, I'm just going to float over here.
Or you're a deep diver in one spot, and then you pull up your anchor. What do divers do? I don't know. And
divers famously pull up their anchors.
I don't know shit about diving.
They call them their scuba anchor. I'm pretty sure.
Please write to us. Write to us and correct us with the...
Yeah, if you have corrections for Halstead specifically with regards to scuba anchors, and you'd like to talk to her more about that, highfriendshipmaterial@gmail.com.
Like, you know shit about scuba, okay?
I know that it's an acronym.
For?
So cool, you boat a lot.
No.
Uh-huh.
It's something about underwater breathing apparatus. That's what I know.
I just want to say I don't appreciate when you try to gaslight me. And you know what? You can't. Because I don't remember what happened, and I don't care about what the truth is anyway.
I love So Cool You Boat a Lot. That's like, oh, it's my favorite new acronym. Mm-hmm. Can we call this podcast
So Cool You Boat a Lot? I think we found it. I think we found it. That's the title. That's good. I'm going to edit everything else out, actually. It's going to be 3 minutes long of just us talking about scuba.
Scuba
chaka.
I really hope that we have like incredibly angry scuba-ers.
Oh my god. Maybe that's our niche.
It's our Nietzsche.
Maybe that's our Nietzsche. where like we are otherwise very pleasant people, but we love to piss off scuba divers.
That's it. That's our audience.
That's how we build our audience as well. We get out there by creating like outrage porn for scuba specifically. We make the rounds on Reddit where people are like, can you believe how wrong this person is about scuba? Even the way they say scuba. No. Sounds
even
very.
They keep saying scuba.
Scuba. It makes it sound like they're making fun of us. Scuba.
I feel the need to say we are not making fun of you.
I'm not.
Scuba.
Scuba.
We're not.
I would never.
We have so much respect for the scuba community. It's
I love that. Yours is like. You're like talking specifically to people from Minnesota who also love scuba. The scuba community.
The scuba community, yeah.
Ah, geez.
You know. Where did we come from?
We probably need to like pull up our anchors and just float away. I think we've sail off into
done?
The sunset. I think we're at a good spot.
I think this is the spot. I think we have to. I can't recover. I cannot recover from this absolute denigration of the scuba community.
Yep.
A.
Nor should we. A.